Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, if I have done everything correctly. We should have Cynthia Hothwinder, who's in the offices of the Journal. Cynthia, good morning.
I'm here.
And we should have Janet Manco.
Good morning.
All right.
See, you got it done. So that's
he didn't hit either. He hit the post in radio terms. He did not hit either of the posts in garage terms.
That's exactly right. Well, let us go right to the front page of the Lakeville Journal. And Cynthia, your story on the right side, highlighted in lime green, is the COVID-19 quarantine rules are loosened. And, you know, it's funny, if you look at the Connecticut statistics and the New York statistics, every day we've had some bad weeks and mostly good weeks. And we noticed we were going up and we stopped that. It's the same thing for New York City. And, you know, it's the quarantine rules, that the way they're doing it around here, and looking at your story, appears to be working for us. I don't know if it could work nationwide, but it appears to be working.
One thing that people seem very concerned about is whether the private school and I think what we call the transient population is impacting our numbers. And I kind of am not sure why everybody cares that much about it, but I guess it's a competition. And so my understanding and what I seem to be observing is that, first of all, the schools are being really, really careful about COVID, and there's been a very low incidence. But it appears that if you were a private school student or staff member and you did get tested positive, that the number would be posted to your native city or home. But we had actually prepared this because Governor Lamont had announced the opening of Phase 3, which is everybody's been wondering and worrying a little bit about the retraction of socializing is as winter comes and the cold weather comes and it's no longer possible to have dinner outside at restaurants or at your friends' houses. So they've changed the regulations a little bit so that you can have more people in a restaurant, hoping to support some of those restaurant owners so that they don't go out of business, but also trying to keep things safe. And as everybody says, it's really the masks that seem to make a difference. So go ahead and dine out, but do wear your mask. But then just before we went to press on Monday, the state had announced that the ban on visiting elderly residents of nursing homes has been lifted, and that's a big deal.
It's not. Anybody. It's not an open lifting though. There's lots of rules that the nursing homes have to.
But it is now possible
to visit.
For anybody who's got an elderly family member, or loved one at Noble Horizons or at Gear or at Sharon Healthcare, it's been a huge big deal. And of course, if you're an elderly person and already feeling a little bit anxious about your care or about your future or about life in general, very hard to not have your loved ones. And really, even though the staff is often very caring and compassionate, it's not the same as being able to talk to your son or your daughter in person. And it's also not the same as being able to put eyeballs on somebody and just kind of go, you know, they're not really thriving. They sound okay on the phone. But so this is a huge big deal. And, of course, as Marshall just said, lots of restrictions as one would want there to be. One visitor at a time, no wandering around the facility, but certainly a really great big deal.
You know, and the way I know about all these rules about nursing home is that, of course, our local access TV station is at Gear Village. Now, it's not a nursing home, but it's a
care facility.
And that is, you know, we, thank goodness, about 2 years ago, put in a separate entrance. And that's the only way we can use that studio, is going through the separate entrance. Because, but we also have to keep people from going into the studio as well. So that's why, for some reason, we decided to do that entrance, and it was a smart decision. But the nursing homes around here and the long-term care facilities seem to be doing a great job, just like the school districts, in keeping the lid on things. And we just have to knock on wood and keep hoping they can keep doing what they're doing.
And people have to continue being conscientious. And, you know, the idea of a little more human interaction with your loved ones is going to make a massive difference to people's
mental health. But also we have to realize that not through COVID, but through the general attrition of life, that the population at our area nursing homes is decreasing. And that a lot of people have been scared to bring their loved ones who might benefit from that kind of a residential situation because they haven't been able to visit them. So we're hoping that now people who, and especially now that there's no more adult daycare at Gear, families who have an older person who really maybe is not fully safe at home by themselves during the day or could just use a little bit of extra care, It is time maybe to start going back to visit CURE and Noble and Sharon Healthcare and see about safely putting a family member there.
All right, and Cynthia, we're going to keep you on the front page and keep you talking about your stories because you have an updated story on the Wilkinson sex abuse case that has now been filed against the town of Salisbury.
So this mirrors the way that the big sex abuse lawsuits in our area were not filed against an individual who often had never been arrested. They're filed against the institution that allowed the abuse to take place. And so for several of our area private schools, they had been hit with very large lawsuits, often continually over the course of several years. This is now a lawsuit being filed by an attorney in New Jersey on behalf of somebody who's 41 years old and is calling himself John Doe, and saying that the town of Salisbury knew that there was abuse being perpetrated on young people by the recreation. Had originally heard from Robert Wallingford, a Salisbury resident, who came forward and said he wasn't looking for any monetary compensation. He was just trying to get the information out. The town went ahead and did a deep investigation with a law firm. The law firm said that they felt that the recreation director's denials were not credible and that they felt that probably at least 11, maybe many more young people had been abused by this person who still lives in the area. And that seemed to have put the end to that phase, the investigation phase, but now this person has come forward and they are definitely seeking financial compensation from the town. And I would imagine if they succeed that others will follow.
You know, when Robbie came out, and I call you Robbie because I went to school with him, when he came to me with the story late one night, and we decided to do it. It was really to kind of clear his mind of this, and also for people in the area who might have experienced the same thing he experienced, to let them know that they were not alone in their thoughts. And he was 100% successful in that. So many people really did. It took the pressure off a lot of different people. And now the town is going to answer this lawsuit. But it was terrific to see pressure taken off a lot of people who had kept this hidden for many, 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 many years. We go over now to it's political season, and they're on the front page of the Lakeville Journal. Maria Horn and Brian Oler and Patrick Sullivan did nice recaps on both of them.
That's right, and beautiful photos of our very attractive candidates. So Maria Horn has been doing a great job as the 64th District Rep, and actually I was the one who interviewed her, and Patrick nicely wrote it up because he is really our political expert. And Brian Oler also had been a great rep, was defeated by Maria 2 years ago when she ran, and so the two of them are facing off on November 3rd. And just a little recap about what's important to them and what their background is, and we will, again, recap toward the end of the month. And I believe Patrick is talking to Craig Miner and David Gronbach this week, who are in contest for the 30th Senate seat.
All right. And another story that you're involved in, and that is the legislative special session opened up on September 25th in Connecticut.
And, you know, I apologize to all of our readers because I managed to have done a series of incorrect dates here. So the headline should have said the 29th,
yeah.
But it's actually not Monday the 29th. It's Tuesday the 29th. So the essential thing, though, of course, is that Governor Lamont called together a special session because the legislature really hadn't been able to convene this year fully because of COVID. And, in fact, Maria had commented in our interview with her that even though she hadn't really been in Hartford as much, she's been very busy meeting with constituents, which is pretty great, actually. So there was they're going to be a hearing on four judges, I believe, talking about the absentee ballots, making sure that those are counted and secure. And, in fact, a really good email out from our Secretary of the State, Denise Merrill, last night saying, don't worry, no matter what has been said in the presidential debates, Connecticut, 100%, your absentee ballot's going to be safe. We're going to make sure of it, and so don't be nervous about it. And we posted that on our Instagram page. But very reassuring words. But the legislature will, again, be discussing that. And then talking about Eversource, really, and concerns that people had, especially after Tropical Storm Isaias, when the power was out for so many days. And at the day that the power went out, that Eversource announced it was going to try and raise rates. So those will all be discussed in the legislative session, and we will keep an ear open for what happens.
And the latest about voting, the state of Connecticut now is going to allow the town clerks to prepare any ballot that comes in on October 30th. They'll be allowed to open up the initial envelopes, double-check what's in that envelope, not how a person voted, make sure that everything is signed and everything, which is going to be a real helpful step for the state of Connecticut to verify all the mail-in ballots and the absentee ballots that are going to come in. That gives them an extra couple days to just get things set up, which is a great idea.
That's really
useful. Huge big deal, yeah.
You've got the story on this. It's so funny. I've got a census worker that's come to my house. He finally did get me. But people that live around me aren't always home, and so he started asking me questions.
You've got these young people sort of wandering through neighborhoods. You can always tell who they are because they've got a clipboard. And Marshall, you can go online and just do it. It takes 10 minutes. And I think people are always nervous about filling out the census because they feel like, well, you know, what if I'm like, what does the government need to know about me for, or what if there's something that's maybe irregular in their residence here? But you should really go in and fill out the census for whatever is your main residence town, because the numbers that we come up with in this census are going to be used for the next 10 years when they calculate things like state grants. And they're going to say, well, you know, there's 5,000 people in Salisbury, so we'll give them X amount of money per person. So if you don't fill out your census, and if there are irregularities in how you live, there's a good chance that you probably need some social support. You're shooting yourself in your own foot, because by not registering yourself with the census, the count doesn't note that you're there, and the funding may not be available. So definitely do go online and fill out the census. Overall, the state of Connecticut has a response rate of 99%, which is extraordinary, but we have an article on our towns page where the First Selectman of Sharon notes that Sharon has a much lower rate of return by double digits than the rest of the state. So don't sell your town short. You go in and fill out the census. It's very fast and easy.
All right. A couple of stories that I want to hit on here. And first of all, today is October 1st, and that means it is another Zoom meeting in Falls Village on the Affordable Housing Project. This is part two. Most of the first Zoom meeting was a presentation on the, but this will be audience participation, and it should be quite a meeting.
So we have two big affordable housing processes going on right now. And the Falls Village one, I'd say, is a smidge more contentious. And it's about building apartments on River Road, set back from the road in a nice area that had been given to the Falls Village Housing Trust by Habitat for Humanity. And there's a lot of concern about it on a lot of different levels from a lot of different people, not just people who are neighbors, but people throughout the town. And then, of course, the benevolent desire to build more housing and make it possible for teachers or people who are lower income and looking for maybe a starter residence to get settled here in the area. So as Marshall said, public hearing is on October 1st, and it's if you want to watch it, go to CananFallsVillage.org for details on how to log in.
Yeah, what's interesting about this proposal, and this is how crazy our world is today, you want to add housing, affordable housing in your town, okay? Mm-hmm. So you form a commission that's a not-for-profit to do it. And then the next question, which arouses some concern in people, is, okay, well, if we're going to have a nonprofit, and we're going to have more people moving into town, we won't be getting the tax dollars from that housing project. You know, it's so funny. There's so many competing angles that people have got to talk out and discuss on all these projects. And also now Salisbury's got one coming up, which you're also talking about. Which, if we remember last time, the affordable housing project was approached for a place off the rail trail in Salisbury. Was very contentious. I don't know if this one this year will be that contentious.
I think it's gearing up to be, and so that one is over in the parking lot area near Dina's Pizza. So there's a lot of reasons why that's actually a fantastic place to put some multi-unit residents. But again, you know, it's up to the people of the town, and always good to participate in these hearings so that you don't wake up one day and go, hey, there's construction going on. What's that all about? And then be annoyed about it. This is the time. But also, for the people who are organizing these projects, it is really essential that you be as open with the public as possible. And you're going to have to take some shots, it's not going to be easy. And that's why the most successful of these affordable housing projects usually are done by professionals who've been through it before and don't take it personally. And I would say maybe things are getting a little personal in some of these affordable housing conversations, and it'd be better if everybody could just be really open, say what's going on, express their concerns, and maybe not get so personal about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the people on these zoning boards, they're your friends and neighbors, and they're doing the job for free. It's you know, there's a balance that has to be struck between people when things like this happen. It's interesting because, you know, I see the story in the paper, and I was speaking with Brent Colley, that Sharon risked federal funding. They had to move where the vote was going to be from town hall, and you'll vote at Sharon Center School for COVID regulations. I know this has happened now in Pine Plains as well, where they had to move their voting.
But in our towns, it's only Sharon and Cornwall that are voting in their schools. The other four towns in Region 1 are all still voting at their town halls.
Yeah. You've got a nice story about downtown North Canaan becoming a shopping hub.
It seems like a dream that's never going to come true, and yet there's a lot of really good energy right now in those Main Street shops. So it's Jesse Morey, who had the really excellent little artisan shop in the sort of low purple building across from Stop and Shop, and now he's moved into what years ago, it turns out, was an A&P. I think a lot of people remember it as the Radio Shack from years ago. Jesse is really a guy, he's a local guy, he really is getting some stuff done, and does contracting and does all sorts of woodworking of his own, but also has pulled together a number of really high-end artisans doing really interesting stuff. His shop is mostly open, it'll be open like a pop-up around the holidays, but there's really, really amazing stuff, really great gifts. And then next door to him is a couple who moved here recently and had been doing sort of artisan sales at their house in North Canaan and had such success with it, they've now opened a little shop called the Old New England Market. So hours for the shop are here in the article. And they feel like there's a lot of movement forward. There's the brewery, which has been doing great. There's some rumors of a juice bar coming into town. There's rumors of a new coffee shop coming into town. So it'd be really wonderful for Canaan if it could be become a destination.
All right, the YMCA, open now at Gear.
Yes, and so we had done a story over the summer about what looked like was going to happen as the YMCA opened. It's relaxed a little bit since then. So, for instance, swimmers, you are able to return and use the pool, and you do not have to swim and then leave the building immediately as had been originally planned. You can now go in, shower there. You can either spray down the shower with disinfectant yourself, or you can turn a card over that says dirty, and somebody will come and clean it. There's spinning classes. We have a photo of the spinning class on the pool deck, which I love because it's so hot. The doors are open, so there's good air circulation. The bikes are all 12 feet apart. There's also classes being held outside on the lawn for now. The upstairs has all been cleaned up. The workout areas have all been set apart. And so I think most of our gyms in the area are now making efforts to do all of these things to make their gym safe. So if you're not sure if your gym is going to have a comfort level for you, go take a tour. They're going to be delighted to have you come walk through, as is the case at the YMCA Gear, and just see if you're comfortable with the way that they've set it up.
All right, let's go to the opinion page. Janet, preparing for a critical election.
Right. It seems this year, this election is different from any other, and one of the ways is that we've been having discussions for so long about whether the logistics of this election can even work, and who thought we'd be having that discussion in the USA. But here we are, and it's serious, and we really have to be alert and take all aspects of how we vote, not only who we vote for, but also how we vote into consideration as we prepare for this election. So we talk about that. After the debate the other night, it's even more in the forefront of everyone's mind that we want our votes counted. And, we actually also have a letter to the editor from Fran Besmer in Kent talking about how to vote. And so anyone who has ideas about this to share. Also, as Cynthia mentioned, our Secretary of the State, Denise Merrill, sent out that announcement about the many ways Connecticut is going to keep things straight. But it's a very anxious time about this.
All right, and lots of letters on, you know, normally you think, oh, this time of the year, they'll all be political. They're not. They cover a wide range of topics.
They really do, and they took up both pages. We could not use any columnists. So for that, I apologize to you columnists, but there's always next week. And, boy, yeah, such an array, and we're so happy to have everybody's opinion. So some of them are political, and certainly read those and think about them, but we also have... Some other really interesting topics brought up. Nancy Green writes about Sharon Hospital and where it's at right now and how important it is to the community. People will remember Walton Green, her husband, who was so active in trying to keep Sharon Hospital a not-for-profit entity.
All right, and we only have about a minute and a half left, and you've got a rather large compass to talk about.
Yeah. And we have a huge compass next week. So coming up on October 10th, which is Saturday, Sharon Playhouse, Sharon, Hotchkiss Library of Sharon, Sharon Historical Society, and the Historic Sharon Burying Ground are doing a tour of the beautiful old cemetery in Sharon, which often happens around Halloween, and who knows what's going to happen with Halloween this year. But local actors and also some professional actors who have been part of the Playhouse community are going to be dressed up in costume in the cemetery reading poems, story poems from Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology, which is set in a graveyard, and kind of iconic figures from small-town life, and should be pretty cool and interesting. There's going to be six tours starting at noon, and then there's going to be a reception afterward on the green. One of my favorite craft artisans is Gail Jacobson from Cornwall, Connecticut, and she and her husband, Jeff Jacobson, also an amazing engineer, has been making beautiful lamps out of old cars. And their friend Lori Barker are doing a show at the Five Points Gallery Annex in Torrington, which is a really getting to be a really happening place. Lots of interesting stuff going on there. That show's only open for a week, from the 9th to the 18th. No opening reception, but definitely worth going to see. And then Tom Keat doing some of his beautiful landscapes in a show at the Academy Building in Salisbury. It opens tomorrow, and it stays open through the month of October.
Well, lots to see, do, and find out in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News, tricornernews.com, and on your newsstands. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio.